Bernard, we are talking about St. Edward's Hospital, aren't we?
Yes, it's brand new. It was completed 15 months ago and fully staffed.
Brand new hospital with over 500 non-medical staff and no patients?
Oh, there is one patient.
One?
Yes, the deputy chief administrator fell over a piece of scaffolding and broke his arm.
That was the famous scene from Yes, Minister. And it seems we've got our very own version of the hospital with no patients, the National Sports Institute with no athletes. The federal government has launched a review into the Australian Institute of Sport after it emerged that a new funding model has turned it into a ghost town. Courtney Walsh reports on sport for the Australian newspaper and joins me now to explain the ghost town. Courtney, welcome.
Welcome. Good evening.
Good evening.
Delightful turn of phrase by Roy Masters in the SMH today.
Yeah.
Look, it's a fascinating program and a fascinating situation, and I suppose the proof will not be in the pudding until the Rio Olympics as to whether the decision made 4 years ago actually works. But what we've got is the only people using the, you know, one-stage world-class facilities in Canberra, the Australian Institute of Sport, are the people that are not going to be competing. They're the people that are pushing the pens, the bureaucrats and visiting schools. It's a fascinating situation.
It seems, at face value, completely insane. So can you explain what they are doing? Like, where's the sport happening?
Well, look, it's basically after the London Olympics 4 years ago, they decided on a review. Not surprising, it happens after every Olympics.
Yeah, I remember that review because we were pretty embarrassed, really.
We were, and so it was called Australia's Winning Edge. Now, what they decided to do was decentralise to an extent, put the additional funding into the arms of the bodies that run all the sports around the country. Now, for bigger sports like tennis, which is based in Melbourne, cycling in Adelaide, and hockey in Perth, not an issue because, look, that's where basically most of the players trained and competed anyway. But for smaller sports like water polo, or, for example, shooting, things like that, it's been a big issue. Volleyball, players are paying for their own, you know, training, accommodation, things like that, which I suppose what the point has been made by John Coates is that we're at risk of losing some of those surprise gold medalists, which we, you know, adore every 4 years, the Simon Fairweathers, the Archer.
They're the stories.
They're the stories
we wait for.
Exactly. So there's been a bit of a, you know, John Wiley, the head of the Australian Sports Commission, has defended the program, but certainly is putting it under review because you can't have this amazing facility with no athletes using it. I suppose we see what happens in 3 to 4 months after Rio. Maybe we change tack again.
Yeah, so it's about Rio to see how we go because we love a medal in this country. We do. A lot of countries love medals, but we're quite fond of them.
Of any colour as well.
Yeah, look, we'll just take any medal. We prefer the gold kind, but we like a medal. And if it doesn't end well, another review and a new regime, maybe less bureaucrats and more athletes there.
Very Yes, Minister.
We'll see how it goes. Let's move to this story. Nick Kyrgios is back in favour after a blinding start to the year, culminating in his first career title in Marseille on the weekend. How significant is the sort of shift in his current form?
Look, his form has been largely outstanding all summer. He was outstanding in the Hopman Cup. He and Daria Gavrilova won Australia's first title there in 17 years, since 1999. Now, that in itself is great. Now, the Hopman Cup, some will see it as an exhibition, which to a large extent it is, but he played brilliantly over there. He was wowing the public. He was playing pool with kids. He was in a really good frame of mind, which was a stark change from, you know, middle of last year where he found himself in a
Constant hissy fits,
very much to teen angst. He had a little breakdown at the Aussie Open against Thomas Berdych, a top-line check. The pressure got to him, but he did play one brilliant set there. But he's since, you know, returned to the court in Marseille this week. He beat three legitimate top-line players, the first guy since 2009 outside the top 10 to beat consecutive top 10 players in Richard Gasquet, who had beaten him at Wimbledon last year, and then Berdych, who beat him in Melbourne, you know, only a month ago. And then he's backed that up by toppling Marin Cilic overnight, who won the US Open only 16 months ago, thrashed Federer in a semi-final in New York. I watched that match and it was astonishing. And the way he's done it has been outstanding. So
what's changed?
Look, his tennis has always been good enough. Clearly, he's just in a great frame of mind, which, as I said, he was there largely through January, that moment of pressure aside where it all got to him and provoked a great backlash, you know, again, which he, you know, either
to a home crowd too.
To a home crowd. But away from Australia, I mean, he gets homesick. He gets very homesick, but he tends to perform exceptionally well. I suppose he hasn't got the pressure.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. Before he left, he's on his way, he great avid user of social media, and he said, "Traveling sucks. I just hate being away." Mm. And yet a week in France, I'm sure, would probably cure most ills. And he's broken through the third youngest player since 2009 to win a title behind, Bernard Tomic, who whose career is, he's having a controversial month again, and Milos Raonic, who played a great tournament in Australia last month. So, look, hopefully, Pat Rafter today has said he thinks he can be number one. Mm. We'll see what happens.
We'd love to have a number one, wouldn't we?
We love a hero.
we also love reformed behaviour, I've got to say. Finally, the AFL unveiled its first ever female field umpire today. You interviewed Eleni Gluftsis last year. Tell us her story.
So, it's a fabulous story. She's umpiring, first female field umpire to umpire. She'll umpire an NAB challenge match, Essendon and Carlton on Sunday. Now, she's from South Australia. She picked it up as a teenager to pick up a bit of pocket money. Ended up going through the ranks there and umpired about 15 senior games there. The AFL has been really pushing female umpires and the female participation at large, as we've, I'm sure, discussed over the last few weeks. Now, she was fast-tracked through. She showed great signs at VFL level last year, umpired on the weekend in the intra-club match at Essendon, and has clearly impressed the judges, who, Wayne Campbell, the former Richmond captain and legend, who is the umpire's coach, he's really pushed her hard, and it's great to see her get a game. So, look, let's hope she performs well, and I'm sure she will. Well, umpires get criticised and bear from everyone, but at the time she said, look, I know I'm going to cop it. I'm an umpire. But let's hope it carries through to the regular season. It'd be fabulous to see.
What a serious smashing of the glass ceiling by her. I actually think I interviewed her last year, I'm quite sure, on 774.
Well, I'm certain that would have been
the year before. I remember her now. Yeah. She was really good.
Yeah, fantastic speaker. I think she was teaching out at St Bernard's certainly last year. Becoming a full-time umpire, it's a nice bit of coin. So
she,
a bit more than pocket change compared to what she was earning as a teenager.
Courtney Walsh, thank you so much. Courtney Walsh is a sports reporter for the Australian newspaper. It's coming up to the 7 o'clock news, but I'll be back in 5 to talk about the changing face of ISIS with Robert Pape, an expert on this. It's news time now.